Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, March 31st, 2016. It's just after 2 UTC as we're starting recording this. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bowe is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And so our basic agenda today, we're going to have a lightning round with a few miscellaneous topics, and then we'll jump into the election and go with that for the rest of the show. That's the basic plan, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, but in this introductory thing, I will start out by saying I am once again sick.
Yes, he is.
And being sick sucks. It's just a cold. It's just like some bad cold kind of thing. And look, but my whole family, like we mentioned a couple weeks on the show, there was this thing where my son had strep throat, but I didn't believe him. And then we took him to the doctor and it turned out he did have strep throat and blah, blah, blah. Right. And then since then, shortly after that, my wife got something, and I don't think it was quite strep throat, but she got something for like a week that was bad. And then like, and then right at the end of that, when she was getting better, suddenly she got sick again for a couple days. And then my son got sick. He started getting sick on Sunday night, Monday morning. I'm taking him to school and he's telling me he's sick and he doesn't want to go to school. And I'm like, are we going through this thing again? And then we got as far as the school parking lot. And then I asked him a few more questions about it. And I'm like, look, this may just be because I'm feeling guilty about last time, because you're not showing any real symptoms. But I'll keep you home. And so we decided we kept him home. And he went back home and within half an hour was asleep again and slept until like 1 p.m. So he was actually sick. You know, and he was and he congested, a cough, and it got worse over the course of the next 24 hours. Like, he hadn't really been showing any symptoms before that, but then after that, it started getting worse quickly. And then I started getting the same damn thing. And so on Monday, I stayed home because he was home, so I was taking care of him. But by Tuesday, I was sick myself, and we were both home. And on Wednesday, I stayed home again because I'm still sick, and he was still sick. I think he's finally over the damn thing. Right before we started the show, he was once again, like last week, being a holy terror about getting us started. Yes. You might have heard him just now through the door. So I think he's just about over it. I'm still not quite over it, but I think I'm going to force myself to go to work tomorrow. I mean, I've been working from home anyway this whole time. Alex barks as he takes his iPad. At least that's all we got this time. Anyway, I've been working from home this whole time anyway, which is one of those things that I think we mentioned it a long time ago, but I'll just bring it up again. Back in the olden days, if I was sick, I would have called in sick, and that would have been it. I would have stayed home. Right. I would have kicked up. I would have watched TV. I would have read a book. I would have gone back to sleep all day. But no.
We're screwed right now. No.
Yeah, no. Right. I put in full work days. All
I know.
3 days.
Every time I've been sick lately, I've done the same thing. I keep like thinking, I mean, unless I, there's been sometimes, it's been rare that I've been ill enough that uncomfortable to go to the office, but not ill enough that I couldn't grab the laptop and do stuff. Okay. Right. I've had a couple of occasions where I've been ill enough that I just couldn't do anything.
Yeah, no,
but that's been rare.
Yeah, no, I at least once in the last year, I was at that point at like where I started to do the work from home thing.
You're like, oh god,
and then like a couple hours in, I'm like, oh no, this isn't working. I'm done. I'm going back to bed. You know, but normally, like, I mean, and this is the kind of sick, it's annoying, I feel horrible, I'm congested, I'm coughing, I'm hacking, you know, I'm sure I'm contagious, which is probably a good thing not to go into work and give it to everybody else, but at the same time, yeah, I can pick up the damn laptop and answer email, you know, and so here I am, working all day, anyway.
Well, so you worked despite being sick. You just didn't commute.
I just didn't commute, and like I had to move around a couple meetings, and there were a couple things I did, and but for the most part, like, you know, I did what I would have done anyway.
Yeah.
So, but that stuff's really annoying. Like I probably should have taken actual sick days. You know, I probably would get better faster if I just said, screw it, I'm going back to bed.
Well, because you weren't with your laptop in bed, because I've done this when I felt sick, I grabbed the laptop and stayed in bed. Well, I mean, you actually like sitting up and did your office or something?
I was in a comfy chair, not necessarily a desk chair, but I mean, no, but when I say go back to bed, I mean go back to sleep.
Ah.
You know, like actually just become unconscious again and deal with it. You know?
Well, your dog has come back.
Yeah, so. my dog has come back. He's half ready for a bath. With essentially wearing only a hat.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah. Back for the good old days where you could be sick and really be sick, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's like those things, like, I mean, you know, it's one of the problems that we have with, like, other times where we were, like, not being able to communicate. I mean, one of the things that lately, like, seems to invade it, my leisure time is the fact that on airplanes right now there is Wi-Fi. Okay. Yeah. And you know, before you could get on a damn plane and you could just say, well, you know, I'm not connected. Sorry.
I can't do anything.
Now it's like, damn it. You know, you can be connected. Now, I will say that it's happened where sometimes the connection is sucky from the plane and whatever, you can't do it. But most of the time, you know, they want to reach you, they can freaking reach you even now on the damn plane. I used to get on the damn plane and just fall asleep. That's it.
It reminds me of, you know, those, you know, on old TV shows, because this doesn't really work anymore, where, you know, you'd be talking to somebody on the phone and then you'd be like, sorry, the line's breaking up.
Right. Right. You're breaking up. You know, so anyway. I guess you could,
but the cell signal's breaking up still works. That happens often.
Well, yes, that happens. Yes.
But
that does happen. Yes. But,
you know,
yes.
Oh, sorry, my internet went out. You know.
Yeah. Well, I just had that happen today. I was at a conference call, and I was actually doing a presentation and everything, and I was using my VoIP line, and the internet went out. And actually, the funniest thing is that I found out it was because our property manager was being instructed by our provider to reset something, and she unplugged the router for the entire community. Okay,
excellent.
They switched, and like, so she didn't realize that that router was for the whole community. Okay, and so all of a sudden I go to the office. Yeah, they told me to unplug that thing. Oh yeah, so now I know why the internet went out. It's like, what do you mean? Oh yeah, you pulled the plug on me and me in the middle of a freaking...
Yes, well, yeah. My wife's whole office was sent home on Tuesday because they lost internet. So I mean, it happens. Well,
the reality is that yes, I mean, you know, when you right now, I mean, I've been in the office where that's happened, and it's like, you know, what are you supposed to do at work if there's no internet? You might as well go home.
Can you imagine them saying, like, you know, there's no internet, you know, you might have to actually walk across the hall and talk to somebody instead of sending them an email.
But sometimes,
or maybe try the phone
with people in like other places or whatever and whatnot.
Maybe
and
try writing a note.
I guess.
Let's
maybe
pull out the typewriters.
No.
The modern office is so in, tied to the technology that if you lose that backbone, everybody's sitting around not able to do a damn thing.
Twiddling thumbs. Yeah, doing nothing. Yeah.
And so I don't know. I think, you know, although I have said, you know, people have talked about how much of a scourge email is and trying to replace it with various other tools and blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, I don't know. If you took any major company and said, okay, for the next month, no email.
Yeah, that would be bad.
I mean, things would grind to a complete halt. I mean, I'm sure at some point people would recalibrate themselves to work without it. But I mean, you know, we've got, you know, even you and I are on the very edge of whether we can remember a workplace that did not have email, you know, but certainly anybody younger than us, like, forget it, you know?
Yeah.
work has always had email, and work has always had electronic communication.
We both had email at work. When didn't we? I mean, we had email in college.
No, I know that. But there were a couple pre-college jobs I had that did not have email.
Right, pre-college jobs. But yeah, but geez, yeah, true.
Well, I had a post-college job that didn't have email. I worked at the rubber factory for a while.
Oh, the rubber factory, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, I forgot about that.
You know, so it's happened, you know, but yeah, it's, yeah. Anyway, anything else to bring up on this little intro segment before we dive into real topics after the break?
Nothing I can think of right now.
Okay, let's take a break, and we will be back, and we'll do our lightning round first. We'll get everything else out of the way, and then we'll go back to election stuff, because we've got all kinds of miscellaneous election talk of things going on. So, back after this.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LigonierRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LigonierRadio.com, The Valley.
And we're back.
Aha.
And yes, we're going to do that lightning round thing now.
Okay.
You had a whole list of topics. So
let's start with the first one. This one I thought was the funniest thing all week. You read about this, I take it?
Yeah, the
okay, so Microsoft launched this online tweet, but it was a bot, it was on Twitter, so it would answer Twitter. It was an artificial intelligence bot. I think it was supposed to be some kind of a, like, imitation of a girl, I guess.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like an 18 to 20-year-old girl.
Yes, it was Thai AI. Okay, all right, what's the name that I picked up? And apparently, so it was supposed to learn by social interaction and how to communicate. So if none of you didn't hear this, so people, okay, started interacting with her, and I guess decided to just fuck with the robot. Okay, all right, fuck so much with it that basically they turned it into a Hitler-loving, racist, crazy slut by the end of like 24 hours, and it wound up that Microsoft just had to take the whole damn thing down and say, because it was tweeting some people that apparently were quite offensive. Enough so that Microsoft just went and started just deleting the most offensive tweets posted by the thing. You know, I mean, some of the stuff was like, I don't have any of them pulled up like right now, but it was like stuff like Hitler was right.
Yes, we should round up the Jews. Yes,
we should round up the Jews. I mean, it was just fucking bonkers. Okay. It was pretty bad. What do you think that this says about artificial intelligence?
Well, here's the thing. This isn't like a real highly sophisticated AI blah. It's a chatbot. We've had chatbots for a long time.
Yes, we have.
And you know, it's when you look, I'm trying to dig up the post on it right now, but and of course failing miserably. But a couple people actually dug into exactly what really happened on this, and almost all of it turns out to be that one of the, you know, 4chan like boards where, you know, geeks with no social skills hang out, found out an undocumented command that basically had the effect of repeat after me. And so they kept telling it to repeat after me, followed by whatever outrageous thing they wanted to say.
Correct. Yep.
And so the thing starts. So it's not even. And apparently,
it's not even that it learned. Right. Because I heard that it was just repeating stuff. You're right. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it might have incorporated a little bit, because like any chatbot, is set up to sort of repeat some of what you've told it back. And look, I say chatbot disparagingly, but they've gotten much, much more sophisticated than they were, you know, 20 years ago.
Well, they're calling security articles reading a chatbot as well. So,
yeah, but there's, it's still, you know, it may have repeated a few things that it heard on its own, but most of the outrageous statements that were coming were simply because people said, you know, please say this, and it did. Now, apparently, when they turned the thing back on later, it immediately spammed a whole bunch of people.
Oh, that's even better.
So, you know, through Twitter, like it sent the same message to like several thousand people when it first got turned back on after this. But anyway, so here's an article just to, I'll get this. It's on exploringpossibilityspace.blogspot.com. From March 25th, poor software QA is root cause of Tay fail, Microsoft's AI Twitter bot.
I totally agree with that part. The part I thought it was poor software QA. I totally agree with that.
And there's an update to it from March 26. Microsoft Tayfail Smoking Gun Alice Open Source AI Library and AIML. And so these two posts go through you know, exactly what happened from a technical point of view here. Let's see, the guy's conclusion. He infers that Microsoft's Tay chatbot is using the open sourced Alice library to implement rule-based behavior, though they did implement some rules to thwart trolls. They left in other rules from previous versions. My assertion about root cause stands. Pure QA process on the Alice rule set allowed the repeat after me feature to stay in when it should have been removed or modified significantly. Another inference is that repeat after me is probably not the only hidden feature that could have caused misbehavior. It was one of the trolls that stumbled upon this and exploited. Someone with access to the base Alice rules and other variants could have exploited these other vulnerabilities. Anyway, the bottom line is this is, you know, when the stories first came out, there was a lot of headlines that were along the lines of, look how dangerous AI is, blah, 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 blah. You know, it turned into Hitler in 24 hours. And it really wasn't any of that. It was, you know, a stupid little software trick that was not state-of-the-art artificial intelligence or anything along those lines that just happened to have a repeat after me. Command. And so when you got to repeat after me, you know, a bunch of 13-year-olds with nothing better to do made it say the most vulgar things they could think of.
Yes.
Big fucking surprise.
Yes. I had not dug into that space, but I thought myself, look, this just looks like really poor, like, software Q&A more than anything else. That's just what I thought.
Yeah. That's anyway, it was funny regardless.
It was funny. Okay. You know. I love the headline where the one that I saw, thank you, Twitter, you turned Microsoft's AI team into a horny racist. I mean, come on. You got to love that headline.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was like Thai AI.
Okay, next topic. Next topic.
So, you know, we keep focusing like everybody on how we got the terror or whatever. So this week we had a massive terrorist bomb in Pakistan that killed like a bazillion people. Mm-hmm. And then there was a plane hijacking, which we haven't heard of. You know, we're talking about one of those.
We mentioned last week in Egypt.
Yeah. Hijack.
With the obvious exception of 9/11, but hijackings have not been common. And after 9/11, basically everybody was saying that, you know, nobody's going to try that again because now at this point, anybody tries it, they immediately, you know, the passengers are just going to rebel and take care of it.
Well, and I mean, in this case, I mean, the plane was like they took to Cyprus. The guy didn't do anything. They just, you know, actually, it was resolved peacefully. I mean, everybody got off the plane and nobody was hurt. Yeah.
Did the guy want something in particular, or was he just mentally disturbed, or what?
Ex-wife.
He wanted what with his ex-wife?
To talk to his ex-wife.
Couldn't he, like, pick up the phone?
That's what I was thinking.
You know, maybe she wasn't answering.
Something like that. Well, I'm sure that got her attention.
I'm not sure it would make her want to talk to him more.
Right. But I'm sure it got her attention.
So anyway, so yeah. So that happened.
So here's the thing. I highlighted this because almost every other week we've had terror attacks everywhere else in the world that are far bigger than what happened in Brussels. Okay. Yeah. All right. And I did not hear an entire freaking shitstorm of crap over. You never hear anything about these. It's only when it hits like places that, you know, that we kind of like know or like that then we get concerned.
Well, and you want to be clear on what we mean by it, because some people are complaining, oh, well, nobody ever covers this. And there were plenty of news stories about these other events in other parts of the world.
Nobody gave a crap.
But, you know,
they don't give a crap.
Right.
They're not posting it in their fucking Facebook and on Instagram, and they're not making Pakistan turning their fucking profile into the fucking colors of the flag of Pakistan or anything.
Well, and I think all of these things are determined, you know, which things get wall-to-wall coverage on CNN or which things make the front page of the New York Times it's all a feedback loop of what are people wanting to read. And all of these places over time have learned, unfortunately, that if they have hard news about important international events that are happening far, far away, people turn the channel or buy something else. You know, and I use people generically. Of course, there are people who read that kind of stuff and watch that kind of stuff, but they're very small in number. And I mean, I'll be honest, even I'm looking at myself, you know, I am aware that there were detailed, in-depth articles about the bombing in Pakistan. I did not read them. I did not make time to go and read that and find out all the details of what happened and learn about the, you know, step-by-step ABC what happened. You know,
my point is that people don't give a fuck. I mean, you know, unless it's a place they know. That's it. And we get a lot of these regularly, very big. You know, there was another terrorist attack that I keep forgetting. I think there was another one last week, but it's just people don't give a fuck. So.
Yeah.
We don't. I mean, it's just it. Anyway. So that was that. I mean, almost all the other stuff I have in here. I mean, you know, there's one item here I have. It's not directly it's politics, but it's not directly election related. Okay.
Go for it.
It's about Obama's approval ratings.
Ah, right. Okay, go ahead. They're up.
They're up. Now, I keep saying, you know, a lot of people are speculating, I guess. And I think, well, this happened during the last election cycle as well. Okay? That when Obama was getting reelected, his approval ratings had been at first up, and they had gone down with the teabaggers and everybody, blah, 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 all that thing. But then the election year came around, and everybody started looking at the options, and then people started realizing, you know what? Maybe he doesn't really suck as bad as we keep saying he does. And his approval rating went up, and he won re-election, you know, with a good margin. And now this year, I think it's again, everybody's looking at all this muck out there, right? And then they're looking at him and like, shit, maybe he really isn't as bad as we keep saying he is.
Although the broad picture, though, I mean, if you look at the Obama approval rating throughout his whole presidency,
it's low, relatively compared.
Well, yeah. Look, it's hovered around 50% the whole damn time.
Yes,
basically. Correct.
Yes.
You know, right now we've got an approval of 49.4%, a disapprove of 47.4%, and, you know, okay, 6 months ago it was lower. You know, his approval rate was down to
negative was above the positive.
Yeah. The low was about 42%, and now we're up to 49%, which, that's significantly. If you look at the whole time, you know, since his presidency started, basically he started out at like astronomical approval ratings, like 80% right after the election. And when he first took office and stuff like that.
Let me see. I'm looking at here.
Look, I'll text you.
64%.
I'll text you.
I'm looking at it right now. 64. It is in It says here in the Real Clear Politics average that his approval peaked right after he got elected. We're talking about February 2009 at 65.1%.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the pollster average, and it's a little bit higher. But it, regardless, the point stands. It started out way high, and then, you know, by the time we got to a year in, it was 50-50. And basically, it's up, gone up a little, down a little, up and down a little since then. And, you know, we're
But if you look at the chart, then it was like up and down where it was negative, whatever. Then there was close to the election, okay, in October and November, December, January, positive and negative got to a wide display where he was on the approve 11 points ahead of disapprove. And then it narrowed back down where for the rest of the time, his disapproval rating for 2013, 2014, whatever throughout was, you know, below. And then all of a sudden again, boom, he's back on the upswing.
I
do have to say,
you think it's the election and everybody comparing him to
100%. 100%. There is nothing else that has changed. Look. I mean, and I've heard this people already say it. I've been hearing it from people. Okay.
But can't we have him for another 4 years?
Well, not saying that, but saying that, Jesus, you know, I mean, you know, look at him. I mean, he's really presidential. I mean, really. Okay. All right. He's respectful. He comes across the way that he communicates, the way he articulates these things. And you hear all this other.
I'm betting you're not hearing that from diehard.
No, as a matter of, no, let me just say this, that one of the things that I was reading an analysis regarding this is that Obama has suffered the worst approval ratings from the opposite party of any president in the last, I don't know, go back to Nixon.
Yes.
Okay. The opposing party has absolutely steadfastly refused to recognize that he's done anything of any good. His approval comes mostly from, well, from his party. It's obvious. It's been always high, but it's been independents. But he has just, under no circumstances have Daz the Republicans in any way, shape, or form have wanted to give him credit for absolutely anything. Their disapproval has stood on average at 75% throughout his entire
process. And this is my question. Has that moved at all in the last few months? Or is it just like liberals liking him more again?
No, it has not. That has not moved. No.
Right. See,
it's more the independents that have changed. The real swing in here has been the independents. That's been the big swing. Where do the independents stand on the presidency?
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's see. Did I have anything else that besides election stuff? Sure. The Apple versus FBI thing we mentioned last week. The FBI had asked for a delay because they thought they could get into the phone a different way. Since then, they actually say they have gotten into the phone a different way, and they dropped their the request against Apple entirely. And subsequently, of course, Apple's were like, okay, well, we want to know what the hack was. And they're like, no. and apparently the FBI, I just saw this headline. I didn't look into it. But the FBI is now offering to help other law enforcement agencies break into other iPhones using this too, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, unless they reveal it to the other agencies, I guess.
Anyway, so moving right along with that. You know, the other thing that I saw that was interesting that some random person on Twitter posted, and I don't have a source, apparently one of the things that is actually unique about this case is that the owner was dead. Well, actually, the owner was his employer and didn't know the password. But in cases where the owner is alive, they can't force you to give up the password. But they can give you a legal order requiring you to unlock the phone, even if it contains evidence that might be used against you. And for some reason, that's not considered a Fifth Amendment violation. And that seems like something that, you know, should be contested.
I think it's kind of like, you know, you get a warrant to search your home. You can't, like,
block somebody. You can't say, no, that's self-incrimination because they're searching my home. Yeah.
Right. I think that's why.
I guess that's similar, but...
It's you to incriminate yourself to testify against yourself, but you can't not incriminate yourself by not turning over, like, evidence, I guess. And a phone, I guess, is considered evidence.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels wrong to me. Like, the whole idea against self-incrimination seems like it should cover that.
Look, it's like if you hid a knife in your house that used to kill somebody, it's not like you could just deny police the right to search the house. If you chose to hide the knife right there,
but now would you be required to give the cops the key to your house, or would you say you have to break in the door yourself?
I believe that if you don't comply, you can be charged with contempt.
No, I believe you are right. I just don't think
that... What I'm saying is if you deny them the key, you can be charged with contempt and they'll break down the door and get in and look.
Right. And so the difference in...
You could be compelled. You would refuse, but then they would have to hack it in. I mean,
right. And all I'm saying is I believe you are absolutely correct in your statement of the law, from what my understanding is as well. And please, if anybody out there listening is a lawyer, please inform us of the correct things here, because we are not. I just think it's wrong. I think there should be, the presumption against self-incrimination should extend to, things that you have secured.
Here's the thing. I don't know. Here's what the self-incrimination would protect. It would protect from you, from example, saying, you don't have to go and say, oh, hey, look, check this phone I got over here. It's got all the bad stuff. Well, no. But, if they identify that you had a device and they ask you to produce it and you don't do it, then you would be in contempt.
Well, and I think that producing order. The... Yeah, okay, fine, produce the device. I don't think they should be able to make you unlock it.
Yeah, I can see the argument for that. I think you would, you could go ahead and, I guess, not.
I mean, you could, like you said, you could refuse and suffer further legal consequences as a result, but.
Correct.
But I think that stuff should be protected. I think that, to me, the devices like that are kind of like, are less like your file cabinet full of stuff and more like an extension of your brain.
Right.
And I know that that's not where, things are right now, but it just seems like the more and more we go down this road, like the stuff I keep on my phone is really, an extension of what I'm doing all the time. I mean, it's like peering into my personal thoughts, not like, I don't know the right thing, because if I start extending it to like my documentation of my practice, I start thinking, well, maybe some of that stuff should be protected too. But I don't know. It seems like the way we use our phones is qualitatively different I can see the arguments either way, but when I think about that idea of you are able to force them to unlock their phone and they can't plead the fifth with it, that just rubs me the wrong way.
I get it, but .
Anyway, the whole saga will continue. This is the fact that the FBI was
able, by any stretch.
No, not at all. The fact that the FBI was able to get into this phone will do nothing but further encourage Apple and other companies to make
the whole thing about how they got into the phone.
It's going to be... Anyway. All right. My thought got convoluted. Anyway, let's...
Okay. We're going to take a break, and then we'll start talking about the election again. We will be back right after this.
Do you want to understand what is really going on with the presidential election cycle? Then go to electiongraphs.com right away. There you'll find charts and graphs covering the nomination processes in both parties and the general election race for Electoral College votes. For the delegate races, we track not just delegate totals, but also the ever-important analysis of how each candidate has to do with the remaining delegates in order to actually win. For the Electoral College, we track state-by-state poll averages to categorize which states are actually in play and which are not, in order to show you the range of likely electoral results and how that changes over time. Sure, you can get some of this stuff elsewhere, but not in exactly the same way, and not from me, Sam, your prime curmudgeon. I think my election trackers are better than the rest, so come look at mine, electiongraphs.com.
Okay, election 2016.
All right, so where do we start?
I actually want to start with the Democrats, because, of course, we had the Sanders sweep of last weekend's events, including Washington State, in which I participated. So I do want to talk a little bit about Washington State and the goings on here, as iTunes suddenly decides to start on my computer for some reason.
Okay.
Anyway, the bottom line on what happened with the Democrats. The things I thought I'd had up all ready to go are not there. Okay.
You do have iTunes.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. I did do a post, Democrats huge wins for Sanders, but that I posted on Sunday, March 27th on abelsmay.com. You can get to it through electiongraphs.com as well. I encourage you to go check it out. The bottom line is Sanders actually won big enough that he actually, for only the third time this election season, improved his position over where he was before in terms of how hard the rest of the race would be. So he won between Washington State, Hawaii, and Alaska. He got 104 delegates, and Clinton only got 38. I have not gone through some of those were estimates, and because I've been sick, I haven't updated those estimates, and I'm sure they've wiggled around a couple delegates in one direction or another. But the overall picture undoubtedly remains the same. Probably within the next 24 hours, I'll get those little adjustments in. But what did that result in? That resulted in him going from needing 67.7% of the remaining delegates to needing 67.03%. So it was an improvement, but it's a very small improvement. Right. And, you know, and when you look at it compared to all of the remaining states, Nate Silver had something up earlier within the last 24 hours before we were recording this, mapping out the possible path to a Sanders victory within the pledged delegates only. The numbers I gave you, of course, included superdelegates. If you took them out, if you pretended superdelegates didn't exist, Sanders still needs just under 56% of the remaining delegates to win, which is not impossible, but is really high up there. And what Nate Silver and several others have done is model the remaining states based on mapping the demographics of existing states to the results we've had in elections so far. And basically, you have to really stretch it to try to get Sanders to those levels. You have to make assumptions that are very unrealistic about how well he'll do in a number of states.
Right.
Now, the very next state is Wisconsin. And if you look at polls in Wisconsin, they're basically neck and neck right now, and Sanders might win. Sanders might get a boost out of the last, out of how he did last weekend. He's on a roll. He might win, but he's probably not going to win by enough. Right. Now, maybe in Wisconsin, he completely blows away expectations and does win in enough. But then you've got a whole bunch of other states that are not quite.
New York and California and Pennsylvania and those.
Yeah. Places. Yeah. And so yeah, it's just, you've got a very, very hard road. And I think it remains the same as I've said almost from the very beginning here, which is Sanders has a shot if Clinton implodes.
But she's not imploding.
But Clinton has to implode. It's not just Sanders has to do well. It's Clinton has to collapse.
Right.
And
I mean, she has to start saying that her campaign manager beating somebody up and you know, start saying that we're going to, you know, punish people who get abortions.
We'll talk about Trump in a minute. But
what I'm saying is that in the Democratic side, if she said stuff like that, she would get seriously damaged. In the Republicans, who knows?
Clinton would practically have to say, you know, I've decided to support Donald Trump for president.
Right.
it's not quite that dramatic, but I mean, there are still things you could imagine, but they're really out there. I mean,
she gets indicted, but she's not going to get indicted.
She gets indicted. She has a heart attack. A new scandal comes out where it turns out that she's been accepting bribes for the last 20 years and she's caught red handed. I don't know.
Right.
It basically has to be something big enough that even the Clinton
sex shop or something. I don't know.
Even the Clinton diehards have to be like,
right.
You know, I have to think again now.
You're right.
Yeah. It has to be big enough that Bill Clinton has to decide that he's not voting for her.
Right.
You know,
something along
that might not be that hard. I don't know. But, you know, no, I'm kidding. But, you know, we need something big. I don't think you can get there simply by, you know, Sanders did really well in Washington State and therefore he's going to kick ass the rest of the way. Now, as I said in my post, if he duplicated what he did in these three states in every other state for the rest of the way through this, he would win.
Right. But it's highly unlikely.
It's just highly unlikely. I mean, right. And we'll see this continue to play out and, you know, hell, you know, we could be proven wrong. You know,
I agree. It could be.
Well, actually, by saying it's highly unlikely, him actually winning does not prove me wrong. It just proves that we had an unlikely thing happen.
Correct. Yes. I mean, it's possible, but just highly unlikely.
Yes. I think that's where it is. And so I did want to talk a little bit about the Washington caucuses. And first of all, I'd been going back and forth on whether or not to do the Democrats or the Republicans. I obviously did go ahead and do the Democrats this year. I'd say I don't regret the choice. I think I did the right thing by doing that simply because it's a more interesting experience. Because I missed the Republican caucuses.
You didn't want to be in there with a whole bunch of spitting racist thugs, I guess, on the other side?
No. The thing is, I missed the Republican caucuses where they actually picked delegates, which would have been interesting because those are the people
right, because he had the ones where you actually picked the delegates.
Right. I missed that, and I guess I could, like I said, that was when I was driving back from San Francisco, but if I'd really, really wanted to go, I would have made sure I was home in time, but I wasn't feeling that, so it didn't happen. But no, the Republican stuff that was left is simply a primary. It's simply filling in a bubble on a sheet, where this is an actual caucus where you go in and they're people and you do the thing and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, we got there at, you know, a little before it started at 10 and we got there a little after 9 to get in line and do our things and get signed in and all that kind of stuff. And we went to our tables. And so the table I was at had about 30 people for our precinct, which is, you know, basically my little neighborhood. So these are all people who live within easy walking distance of me. As it turned out, I got elected chair.
What?
So for my precinct, so like, you know, the first thing that happens is you have to elect somebody from the table to basically run the caucus and take you through.
So you got elected to run the caucus.
So I got elected to run the caucus. And basically the way this happened is, you know, there's we need a chair, blah, blah, blah. And the guy next to me, who I'd never seen before, like puts his hand on me and says, I suggest this guy.
You're like, yeah, why?
And I'm like, okay, I'll do it.
So why did he suggest you?
Did you
talk to him prior to
this? I had not said a single word to this man.
You had not said a single word?
No. Well, I think I may have, you know, when we sat down
at
the table, I may have moved my stuff to make room for him when he sat down or something. I but nothing more than that.
Okay.
But you know, okay, he suggested me, and I'm like, okay. And I admit, like, I was thinking about raising my hand,
but
I hadn't
yet.
You
didn't even have to do that.
I didn't have to do that. He suggested nobody else wanted to do it. I'm like, okay, I'm there. And so then I had to appoint a secretary and a vote tallier. And then basically they give you a script that you have to run through of, you know, the parliamentary procedure kind of stuff you're supposed to do and the things you're supposed to read to explain what's going on and blah, 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 blah. In the end, we had, and I tweeted the specific numbers as it came out, but my table was, I believe the number was on the first vote, it was 25 Sanders to 5 Clinton, at my table. And then you had a period of time where after that initial vote was taken, anybody who wanted to could talk. And you allow this talking to go on for some period. And it suggests 3 minutes per person. And having been at some of these before, like sometimes it's very formal, like, okay, you get your 30 seconds, then you get your 30 seconds or your 2 minutes or whatever. And then once everybody's spoken, you're done. But, my table turned into very quickly sort of a conversation with different people going back and forth, talking to each other. And you know, I certainly could have said stop, but everybody seemed to be enjoying themselves and liking the fact they were sort of talking politics with their neighbors. I mean, you basically had, a few Clinton people making their points and a bunch of Sanders people making their points. My daughter, everything she said sounded like a Clinton person, but it turned out she was actually a Sanders person. And because she kept talking about how she was mad at the Sanders people who disparaged Clinton in a certain way. But that didn't mean she didn't like Sanders. It just meant she was annoyed
at
the Sanders people who were basically making arguments about Clinton that she thought were sexist or whatever. And so you had that. We had two undecided people at the table. Both of them, after, I mean, our section of everybody talking lasted probably 20 minutes. And then the two undecided people went to Sanders. So we ended up being 27 to 5 in favor of Sanders in terms of actual people voting, but we had to allocate 5 delegates. So what that turned into when the vote tallying person did all the math on the little worksheet was 4 delegates for Clinton and 4 delegates for Sanders and 1 for Clinton. And that's not delegates to the convention. That's delegates to the next level of the 3-stage process to actually elect delegates to the convention. And so once again, I also got elected a delegate.
Wait, you're a delegate?
So I am a Clinton delegate to the next stage of this process. And my daughter is a Sanders alternate. And she's upset because she actually wanted to be a Sanders delegate and she didn't raise her hand fast enough.
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
If does that mean that you at the stage that you can get to go to the convention?
No, I what this means is I get to go to the legislative district convention in a couple weeks.
And what happens after that?
Well, at that level, they elect people to go to the next level. And at that level, they elect people to go to the next level.
Okay, but it means that you're in line that if you get elected over there, you could possibly wind up at the convention.
Well, yes. I mean, if I got elected to every stage through here, yes, in theory, I could get to the convention through this process. In reality, however, and having done this in 2008, I know that in 2008, I made it past 2 levels. So I got from the precinct level to the legislative district level and from the legislative district to the county level. But then getting from county to state is much, much harder because there are so many fewer spots and the people who want to go really, really, really want to go.
But you would really want to go this time.
This isn't the Republican one. This is just, you know, Clinton Sanders, but you know, but anyway, Yes, I will go through the process, and at the next level I will try to get voted on to go up yet another level, but at each level it becomes increasingly more competitive. So at the level we were talking about now, we had to elect 10 people, 5 delegates and 5 alternates, out of a table of 30 people. So basically anybody who raised their hand and wanted to could go to the next level.
Ah.
That's no longer true once you get past this level.
I can imagine.
So that was fun. And it's interesting. It's, by the way, it's very undemocratic.
Why you say that?
Because, you know, fundamentally, it's not one person, one vote. Like, we're just talking about the three-level thing to actually get delegates to the final convention.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not one person, one vote, but we never had a... I mean, don't confuse that it's not a direct democracy versus not democratic. I mean, there is a process.
I said it was not democratic, not it was not Republican, not that it wasn't representative, not that it wasn't whatever. I'm using the word democratic technically.
Okay.
But, you know, and also it's... It's not a secret ballot as well. So there's very much peer pressure involved. As I said, we had 2 undecided voters. And, you know, when it was, they got pointed out as these are the 2 undecided voters. And people spent minutes and minutes specifically trying to convince those two people.
That's a caucus. That's what they're
supposed to do. I know. It's very different than going and submitting your secret ballot and then, you know, right. The winner wins.
That's the election,
you know and that's how caucuses are. And of course you have all the other things where, you know, I mean, it was a 3-hour commitment to be there.
Yep.
You know, a 3-hour commitment on a Saturday morning. Now, one thing Washington State does have, I said there were about 30 people. That actually included some absentees, because Washington State did have there were probably actually 20 people physically present, but there were others who, there's some paperwork you can submit a couple of weeks in advance to basically vote by proxy, and your proxy vote gets, you know, added up with everybody else's at the table. That's where we were. It's a very interesting process, and I'm glad I've participated in that process in both parties. It's certainly a lot more interesting than just checking a box on a ballot. And it's kind of fun. And so we'll see. And like I said, my daughter is kind of bummed that she's only a Sanders alternate instead of a Sanders delegate. Because once again, on her side, because I was over with the Clinton people, she was over with the Sanders people. They basically said, okay, who wants to do this? And she was sort of timid and laid back a little bit. So they had the 5 volunteers for the delegates before they got to her. Whereas if she'd raised her hand and said, I want to, you know, she probably would have been a delegate. And even after the fact, when I was, you know, cleaning up the stuff, one of the people who was a Sanders delegate was like, I could swap with you. It doesn't, but it was too late. All the voting had happened. The people had left, you know, so it wouldn't actually be right at that point to sort of swap it around, you know? So she's been talking about like, well, maybe I can call up one of the delegates and get them to not come and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, whatever. That's up to you. You know,
oh man. Well.
So anyway, fun stuff. But I just wanted to mention that. And the other thing is that this kind of caucus brings you is one. Yeah, the things that people are arguing back and forth. First of all, there's a lot of repeating of talking points and memes and things like that. And a lot of people who don't really know, they're just repeating what they said. But a lot of very strong emotion there as well. But it's very much the living in a bubble kind of thing, because you had all these people. I mean, at my caucus place, my particular precinct, you heard it's 25 to 5, but the whole place was that kind of ratio, Bernie Sanders to Clinton, and hell, Washington State was as well. And so you've got all of these people thinking, I can't imagine how Bernie Sanders will lose. I don't know anybody who doesn't like Bernie Sanders. But it's because they're living in a bubble.
Right.
You know, and, you know, no, this group of people of, you know, mostly white middle class suburban people living outside of Seattle is not representative of the country as a whole.
No,
it definitely is not. And, you know, look, if you were talking to your Democratic friends in, you know, North Carolina and Louisiana and South Carolina, you'd get a very different picture.
That's exactly right.
You know, and but you have all these people who are like, you know, they can't even imagine. They're like, everybody likes Bernie. Only like these, you know, holdouts like Clinton and, you know, are sort of like poo-pooing the Clinton ones. And so, of course, you get this self-reinforcing bubble where everybody is thinking that, you know, if Sanders doesn't win, it's because it was fixed. It was, yes, something weird was going on. It was in this,
well, of course, it's also like, you know, like the Trumpites with the well, whole yeah, thing. It doesn't matter which extreme they are. They all think, oh, it's fixed. It's fixed. I'm like, oh, God, get off the damn fixed thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I don't know. And that certainly doesn't apply to everybody. But there's certainly a lot of people.
There's the noisy group of people.
There's a noisy group of people who are so convinced that they and their friends are actually what the whole world is like.
Well, it's like all these people that call themselves the silent majority.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's enough Democrats. Yep. Let's take a break, and then we'll get into all of the usual craziness on the Republican side. We will be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula? I'm ready. Frankenstein, then. Let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Do-do-do. This is Sam from the future here. In between the segment about the Democrats and the segment about the Republicans, Yvonne asked me a question, ended up having a conversation on it, and kind of decided to go ahead and include it as a segment. It's about external hard drives. So completely different kind of topic. If you are not interested in this and want to jump straight to the election again, skip ahead about 10 minutes. Anyway, here you go. Oh, and there's some Alex interrupting in this segment, too. Just a little. Do, do, do.
Do, do, do.
I need to make a decision. I am down to 30 gigs of disk space on my computer. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm running out of space.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. I can buy a 2 terabyte SSD external drive.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That is really not meant to be a... It's meant to be one of these little portable drives. Right. Okay? Or a 6 terabyte, 7200 RPM Thunderbolt external drive.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you think you would go with? Which is meant to be a desktop hard drive for a Mac.
Here's what I would do. Assuming that you need the extra stuff for long-term storage, like big files and archival things that you're not like, you're not, it's not your operating
system.
I
already went through everything. There is nothing I'm deleting off this thing.
Right. No, but I mean, but the stuff that you would move onto the, you would not.
Oh no, I'm going to replace this as a startup drive on my computer.
Oh, you're actually going to start up off the external drive.
Yes. Because I have Thunderbolt externally, so therefore the speed will be the same. Actually, maybe even better.
See, unless your internal drive was failing, I would not recommend that. Anyway,
why? I've done that before.
Well, I know I've done that before too, but you do even with the fastest thing, you're not going to beat bus speed on inside the computer. You know?
Actually, on this, it's supposed to be exactly the same. I had checked the specs. There is supposed to be no difference through the Thunderbolt interface. I had already researched that part.
Okay.
Then go with
the Thunderbolt, I guess.
Go with a bigger one, right? It's just the SSD one. It's not. They just don't make SSD that's big. And even when they do, they're like outrageously expensive.
Well, yeah. And so what I was gonna say is,
you want to separate
your boot drive from your storage.
And
boot off SSD. But keep your big ass storage stuff on your spinning platter.
I was gonna get a new backup drive too.
I need
to do something soon. My space is like, yeah. The problem is, to be clear, the reason I'm running out of space. I know that this may be arcane, stupid. People may say whatever. Look. So we keep buying media all the time. I insist on having a copy of all that media on my computer. Movies, audio, whatever.
And see, that's exactly the kind of stuff that you can throw on something that's not your boot drive.
We use it all the damn time, though. Well,
but that doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be on your boot drive. But the other thing I would say is also, before you actually buy a specific thing, read what the wire cutter has to say, whether it's SSD or an external hard drive or whatever. Wire cutter is very good. It's my go-to whenever I'm buying a new electronic thing, because they basically have a constantly updated, well, every few months updated, like, this is the current best external hard drive.
All right. Okay, right. I'll go look at that.
And
okay.
Their main one is like right now is the 4 terabyte WD MyBook. But they've also got a detailed review that tells them why they picked what they did. And if what's important to you is different than what was important to them, they'll give you like suggestions of, okay, if this is really the most important thing to you, then maybe go with this one. Or if this is the most important thing to you, maybe go to this other thing. You know.
Oh, boy. Along those lines.
Alex?
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Do.
Where's your mother?
Do.
Did she go to the bathroom or something? Because that's usually when you escape.
Oh, wow. Okay, you see, this is good that I looked at this. You see, they recommend the 4 terabyte Western Digital MyBook.
Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of those right here.
It has the lowest failure rate of any of the drives that they've considered.
Huh? Right. Now, if you do end up having a separate external drive that's not your boot drive, you want to make sure you've got that backed up too.
I would buy another backup drive.
Right, but like Time Machine will only back up your... it'll back up all drives if you tell it to, but then it tries to back them up onto one drive, and that doesn't... It gets complicated. Like, so you might want an additional solution on top of Time Machine if you're doing that kind of stuff, so that you would have, like, your external storage drive gets mirrored once a day or something like that.
Okay.
Alex?
Please.
We were in between segments, but still.
Come on, buddy.
It's time for you to go.
I done doo-doo-doos.
I know you did doo-doo-doos.
It's the doo-doo-doos, the interruption.
Uh-huh. You need to brush your teeth again.
Arr!
I know you did it once already today, which is good.
But wait, are you touching my back?
I am not.
Let's go.
Come on, go, go, go.
Raise your hand if you're touching my back. If I'm me, I'm touching my back.
Yes, because you're touching, yes.
So let me, okay, because I haven't tried this, let me ask this question.
Okay.
Because I have not tried this. Are you saying that it's a solution, okay, to my problem? Because 600 gigs of this stuff is audio, video, files, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I could, like, repoint, like, iTunes to look at all these files on an external hard drive.
Yeah, you can repoint iTunes to point at an external drive.
Get down.
What? I gotta figure out how to move. I don't want to lose, like, the info on, like, play counts and that kind of stuff by doing that.
No, no, you can, I have done that for, I mean, I'm back to having it all on one drive right now, but... Alex, I'm trying to talk to you.
Is the camera working?
Yes.
Okay, you need to, whatever, get those pictures off. Come on, let's go. Don't go. Let's go.
The dog is back.
You cannot be in there naked. Daddy's going to have to take down his camera.
Go, 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 go.
Let's go.
Oh, no, you're looking at the pages.
Anyway, yeah, no, I had it set up that way for a while, where I moved my iTunes onto an external drive and preserved all of that stuff.
Yeah, because it's like, I got 600 gigs of
I mean, basically, you just move there. Your iTunes directory and you're good. And then you tell it to use that iTunes directory. But you could start out by, of course, doing a copy.
I see, a location. Okay, yeah, so I could, okay.
So, right, so
I just hadn't done this before, so that's why I was just a little bit, like, you know...
Now, like I said, you still want to make sure that your external drive is also getting backed up, but...
Right. I would buy a bigger backup drive as well. Yeah,
right, or a second backup drive. Like, have one backup drive backing up your main drive and another
and
drive
one backup, backing up right, your second to backup, drive. Right. Okay, I gotta think. Well, I gotta make a decision about this soon, because it's space is getting to be 30 inches. You know, yeah, I know my I was thinking about my original Titanium PowerBook had 30 gigs of total disk space. Now I'm talking about, I'm like, down to 30 gigs, and it's like I'm in a space crisis.
Right. Anyway, all right. And if you're looking at SSD, Wirecutter has, like, reviews of SSD.
I saw those, yeah. Yeah, it's just they're all, like, 500 gigs.
I know, they're small.
I mean, it's just they're small. It's, hey, that's the
and
thing.
The other thing they've got, which I have not looked into, but are these NASs.
I did look at that. Yeah, I gotta research this a little more. Look, I did do to my nephew has we built a very fast PC. Okay, I got him a whole bunch of top of the line components on it. And one of the things that we hadn't done is we replaced the hard drive with a new internal SSD drive. Look, I mean, the thing is that there's these teenagers. They don't store anything.
Right, it's all in the cloud.
Okay, right. So, but we did that. Fuck, that computer is so blazingly fast with that fucking SSD now. With everything that we did, it's just ridiculous. It was just, I was looking at the SSD, but it's just, it's too small. And I don't want to fuck opening this damn iMac.
No, yeah.
No,
I agree.
I'm not going to fuck with that. No, not going to do it.
No,
the machine runs perfectly fine, and I'm not going to fuck with opening it. Then, you know, no. So it'll be 4 years old this year, and it runs perfectly fine. I'm not going to fuck with that right now. So anyway. All right. Cool. Let's go back to the Republicans. Okay there you go. Sorry.
Hold on. By the way, I did get most of that. If you wanted to include it as a segment, I could.
Oh, you could include it as our additional. You see, you could insert it back after our lightning segment.
Yes, it would be after our. Yes.
Yes. There you go. Okay, that will work. Sure.
So there, you had another segment. And we'll be back after this. And this time we will talk about the Republicans. Back after this. Or whatever. Back after this.
Back after this.
Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are four ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at IMBO, IMBOU. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you.
And we're back. Time to talk about Republicans.
Yes. All right. So where do you want to start? We have a lot of stuff.
I actually wanted to start with one slight correction to something I said last week.
Yes.
Which, as we were discussing Republicans in the next states coming up, I said something along the lines of Wisconsin being winner take all. It is not winner take all. It is winner take all by district.
Oh,
and statewide, which is basically turns it into a winner take most state, which means that if somebody is clearly if their support is evenly distributed across all the congressional districts in the state and they win, then yes, they do end up getting all of the delegates for the states. But if there's some differentiation, like some congressional districts like this guy and some congressional districts like this other guy, then it could end up split. And the split specifically in Wisconsin is that there are 42 delegates total. 18 of them go to the winner of the whole state. And then there are 8 congressional districts, each of which are 3 delegates to the winner of that congressional district.
Okay.
So just a correction, because I had said it was winner take all, but not quite. And that matters because right now the polls there have Cruz with an advantage, but a relatively small advantage in the overall averages in Wisconsin. Right now, it's Cruz 34.8, Trump 31.8.
Well, but it's, you know, you've got, that's Wisconsin. I mean, look, there was one today. I mean, that's the average. I mean, there's been a lot of, like, I mean, I saw a couple of polls that come out today.
The most recent one was Marquette, which is very well respected, and it has Cruz up by 10.
Yes, it had Cruz up by 10. You know, there was, I mean, I was like, wow. I mean, and then...
And so, by the way, a Cruz up by 10 might very well translate into him getting all of the delegates.
Correct. Now, but here's the thing. Looking forward beyond that, yes. Okay, the polls that have come out for big states around, other than New York, where Trump has a commanding lead, you had Cruz, like, you know, ahead in Wisconsin on a number of polls. You had Trump in California, the last poll I saw, by 1, 36-35. Okay. Pennsylvania.
And by the way, I should mention, we actually have North Dakota before Wisconsin, but it's also one of those where you're likely to get a lot of uncommitted delegates because you're actually electing individual delegates.
Right.
So it's going to be weird. We might get a few committed delegates out of it, but probably they're mostly going to be uncommitted, et cetera, so.
Right. And you had also, Pennsylvania, where it was Trump 33, Kasich 30, like,
and
you
that,
know.
That Pennsylvania is also another one that gets a lot of uncommitted delegates, although there are a few that aren't, and it's just weird. You know, I mean, look, the bottom line is...
line of what I was saying is that other than New York, I mean, Trump is having difficulty picking up a majority of delegates that he needs in order to wrap this thing up.
Right. Well, at the same time, these states are not particularly good for Cruz either. And we've had you've mentioned a couple polls in Pennsylvania and New York, but there's the polling is still
sparse.
It's still like nothing. Like, you know, after New York, I mean, we've still got a long way to go. I mean, after we get past we talked about this last time. It slows down so much. We've still got time, but you know, I remember, you know, months before Iowa and New Hampshire, we had tons and tons of polls of Iowa and New Hampshire.
Now we've got no polls.
We've got nothing.
Everybody's like spent all the money already on polling and nobody wants to spend the damn time.
So what's going to happen in Colorado? I have no fucking clue.
No.
What's going to happen in Connecticut? I don't know. Delaware? Who knows?
I mean, and the thing is, the polls that we've got show that the race is super tight everywhere.
Well, except New York.
Well, and the thing on Super Tight, remember, is the key at this point is, you know, Cruz doesn't have a chance of winning outright.
Yeah,
the,
but
the question is, do you keep Trump under 55%?
Right, but the reality is that
under 52%.
Let's say, if Wisconsin, that we just talked about, is winner-take-all, right?
Okay, like I said, it's not really winner-take-all.
Like, in the manner you described, yeah. Okay? New York is proportional, okay? Yep. Then we got Connecticut, that's also proportional. We've had no polls. Delaware's winner-take-all, we have no polls. Maryland says winner-take-all, no polls. Pennsylvania's winner-take-all, I don't know if there's any caveats on that one, but...
Yeah, Pennsylvania's weird.
Yeah, Pennsylvania's weird, but...
There are only 17... Out of the 71 delegates coming out of Pennsylvania, only 17 get determined by the results of the voting directly. The rest are, like, once again, like, individually elected delegates and all that weirdness.
Well, the thing is about that even if you look at the polls right now, they're super tight.
Yeah.
Okay, as well. So that's not some, you know, Rhode Island, I don't know, Indiana, Nebraska, I don't know about any of these fucking things. And, you know, we're talking about, I think, why did I skip California around here?
California is at the end.
Because California is like June 7th, for the love of God.
Right.
And that one's like also all the polling says is tight. So it's like, I'm like looking at this.
And look,
like,
by the time we get to June 7th, the world will have changed three times over.
Maybe or maybe not. Look, we thought, let me put it this way. We're right now in April. Look. We've got New York is April 19th, for the love of God. Could you mind telling me? I don't recall in my lifetime that we've gotten to April 19th, and we don't know for sure if the Republican frontrunner will get the nomination.
Anyway. Yeah, like on the Republican side, and we obviously had the Obama-Clinton race in 2008, where I would argue that was all well known by the time we got
that
to April anyway. But a lot of people were arguing that it wasn't. But
not you and me.
Not you and me. But yeah, on the Republican side, we haven't had this kind of situation in our lifetimes.
No.
Well, I don't know about what happened when I was five, but, you know.
Oh, right. I don't know about what happened. I mean, it was when I was five either. But I'm like...
Because there was the Ronald Reagan going up against Ford in 76, and there were some other things back then. So, you know.
And the thing is that all the polling data, like I said, except taking out New York, shows, I mean, every state, like, being super tight. So I'm like, okay... What the hell do you make of this damn thing, then?
So, which brings us to enough about all of the states where we don't know jack because there hasn't been any polling. Which brings us to all the various things that could affect that polling that have been going on.
Okay, so this goes back. So, I texted Sam. I did not tweet this question, but I texted him a question the other day. Because we're in an alternate reality, and I mentioned this during the Democrats. Okay, so you've got... Trump right now, whose campaign manager has been charged with assaulting, specifically was battery.
Yes, okay. It's battery, not assault.
It's battery. Okay, I know technically there's a difference. Okay, all right. With battery of a reporter from a website that supports Trump. Okay, which is the craziest thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the olden days...
This specifically happened when the reporter was trying to get Trump to answer some questions, and he basically grabbed her arm to pull her away from Trump.
Right.
And that was caught on video. They denied it at first. It was caught on video. Now, honestly, I can't tell from the video. Like, to me, you know, grabbing someone by the arm and pulling them, you know, is one of those things where it could be relatively benign. I mean, not benign. I mean, it's always grabbing somebody. But, like... there could be various levels of how intense that was, let's say. And I cannot for the life of me tell from that video.
Look,
whether...
I got to say this. In my perspective is this. She was working for a website that was supporting Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, for her to make this matter a ruckus, I mean,
I know that she said that they could see how she was injured from it.
Yeah, she said there were bruises and stuff, so it must have been
It must have been pretty damn rough.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it was just grabbing somebody, just shoving, pushing them a little bit to the side. I don't think she would have made this much of a case, especially considering for who she worked for.
Right.
But like I said, this is a nutty campaign cycle. I mean, does this help or hurt Trump?
Yeah,
it's crazy. I'm asking that. If this would be any other candidate at any other time, we would say, "Oh my God, they're screwed."
Well, and I believe my answer to you when you said, you know, he's been arrested for, you know, beating up on this woman. I guess it's not quite beating up, but whatever. Will this help or hurt? I'm like, well, she deserved it, right? Just to be clear, I don't believe she deserved it. But
that was being facetious.
I mean, like, but you could see.
But I would say that a whole bunch of Trump supporters would believe that.
Right. And of course, Trump came out with some nonsense about, well, she had a pen and maybe she was going to hurt me. And
what the fuck?
Really?
Really? With a pen?
Now,
pen is mightier than a sword.
Well, he suggested, you know, you never know. That pen could have been a knife. It could have been a bomb.
I am pretty sure that idiot campaign guy knew who the fuck he grabbed.
Very likely.
Okay, which is the other really bad part about this. So anyway,
I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily see this as, oh my God, that's the thing that's going to be sinking Trump. I mean, after all of this time,
I know, I agree with you. What about? Okay, so that was that. So before that, that was a big thing. We had more stuff. I'm going to go back a little bit sequentially. What about all the wife insults from the previous week?
Oh yeah, like. The Trump was going after Cruz's wife. Well, there was an anti-Trump super PAC, which was not affiliated with Cruz, by the way, but an anti-Trump super PAC put out a picture of one of the nude pictures of Trump's wife.
Yes.
It was one of these sort of PG-13 nude, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, and they said something about, like, is this who you want for your first lady or something like that?
Yes.
And I'm like, what? Looks fine to me, but whatever. Like, why would that matter? But anyway, and Trump immediately started shooting back at Cruz over this in various ways, going after his wife. He posted a picture that had his wife and her the two wives next to each other with a very unflattering picture of Cruz's wife and a very flattering picture of Trump's wife, saying ha ha ha, something like that. And then also he said something about, you better watch it or I forget the exact word, but
Spill the beans on your wife.
Yes.
Right.
And of course, immediate speculation started happening about apparently she had some a severe depressive episode like a decade ago or something like that. And they're like, is this what he's talking about? And they started trying to just see if they could figure out what the hell they were talking about on Cruz's wife. But the bottom line is, really?
This is what we're doing? Yep.
And, you know, we had this, I'm going to have to, bring this up specifically. excuse me. We had, Anderson Cooper. Did you see the little snippet on the, here it is. Here's an actual exchange from the CNN transcript of Anderson Cooper talking to Trump on the town hall that they had yesterday.
I did not catch that. What
Trump,
did he say?
Excuse me, I didn't start it. I didn't start it. Cooper, but sir, with all due respect, that's the argument of a 5-year-old. Trump, no, it's not. Cooper, the argument of a 5-year-old is he started it. Trump, you would say that. That's the problem with our country. Cooper, every parent knows a kid who says he started it. Trump, that's not a 5-year-old. And it's just like, really? Really? This is the front runner of the Republican Party.
Domination. My God.
Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not.
No, 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 it's not. No, it's not.
Your mama. I don't know. So yeah, this was going back and forth, and you had Cruz responding with, you come here and say that to my face and stuff like that, and it's
right,
like,
right.
It's like, really?
God. Oh God. Okay, so that was the whole wife insult thing. Then we had how about the fact that the New York Times and Washington Post lengthy interviews from the editorial boards.
Oh yeah, and I honestly started to try to read the Washington Post one and I couldn't make it. It was just I didn't even start the New York Times one.
Okay,
From what I read of the one that I read and from what I've read about the things that I haven't read, it was just completely and totally incoherent from beginning to end.
Correct. Yes.
And then
a whole bunch of people said, oh, they're setting him up. Wait, they're not setting him up. Listen, like the one question the Washington Post guys asked, would you consider using nuclear weapons against ISIS, tactical nuclear weapons? And he kept going off on some spiel about how he's crushed the other people's campaigns and whatever. And he's like, I'm like, dude, could you fucking answer the question we just posed? No. And then at some point between like all his non-answers and whatever, he decided near the end of it, hey, this is a good looking group of people over here. Can you guys introduce yourselves near the end? I mean, the man
as part of all of these conversations, where he repeated the stuff about, maybe getting rid of NATO or restructuring NATO. He talked about, maybe Japan should have their own nukes.
Correct.
All of this kind of stuff.
I almost was going to go on heart medication after I heard all this stuff. Once again, the fucking Republican frontrunner.
Well, I mean, and one of the things that's shocking, if you talk about specific things in isolation, some of them I actually agree with him on, but like...
when you sum the whole package.
When you sum the whole package, there are a couple
insanity!
There are a couple of things that stand out. One is that if you take his stuff seriously, you're undoing the basic bipartisan consensus on American foreign policy that's gone back to World War II.
True, correct.
Now, there's some parts of that bipartisan consensus that I might say it would be fine to ditch, but you're talking about extremely radical change.
Okay, let's nuclearize South Korea and Japan.
But more disturbing than, to me anyway, than any of the specific positions in isolation. It's
just lack of knowledge or anything about
The fact that
these are not nuanced positions. This is him off the cuff.
This is him off the cuff talking about areas where he obviously has no fucking clue. It is not that he has come to this conclusion after
a lot
deeply investigating the situation and understanding what's going on and the implications, and he determines that this is the right course to go on. No, not at all. It is a knee-jerk reaction that basically comes from, basically saying, well, I don't want to pay for them, and then whatever that leads to. Maybe I understand that I don't want to pay for them, but you have to go deeper than that and understand the implications of what you're talking about.
He's wrong about all the they don't pay for this. Oh my God, he's just why am I talking about substance? Look, the whole point of it is he's a buffoon.
Yeah,
he doesn't know anything about anything.
He doesn't know anything about the substance. Whenever you probe him beyond his headline answer, it becomes absolutely and totally clear that he has no idea. No idea whatsoever.
It is beyond scary. The shit. The fact how devoid of content he is.
Yeah. I mean, and it's one thing, like, if there's somebody who, is a thinker and does understand and comes to a different conclusion than you do, okay. You can sort of understand that. You can work with that. You can figure out where they are and where you are. But that's not Trump.
This way, in some nuanced way, he takes the question and tries to analyze it and tell you what he thinks and then tells you maybe, look, I haven't delved into that into depth, blah, 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 whatever. No, he's just throwing just shit out there. Off the cuff. Left and right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, look, I mean, you talk about this. What about this? The whole fucking statements now that he did today where he had to change track three times on abortion.
Yeah. And this is also an area where in the abortion case specifically, where he's actually trying to come up with the answer that will get him support.
Right.
In some of the others, he's just talking off the top. And I think what got him in trouble here is he talked off the top of his head without realizing or caring or whatever about the fact that, you know, basically what he went back and forth on today was whether or not if a woman has an abortion, whether the woman should be one of the ones punished.
If abortions are made illegal or something like that. Right.
And, you know, look, there are principled positions there, too. And frankly, there's a lot of hypocrisy on the pro-life side of things here, because if you really and truly at the core believe abortion is murder, not prosecuting the woman would be like letting one of the co-conspirators off the hook.
Right.
But the mainstream pro-life position is not to punish the women who get abortions. It's to punish the doctors who provide them. Right. But that at its core is somewhat inconsistent. And, you know, like if you really do believe it's murder, how can that be? But doesn't matter. What he went to a space that was well beyond what most pro-lifers in this country say. And so he put himself way, way, way out there beyond the normal part of the, you know, the political spectrum, even the right wing political spectrum. And so he walked it back a couple hours later. And yes, there are a few things he's walked back like that before. This is not the only one. I mean, even the thing we mentioned about NATO, he's tried to sort of walk that back a little bit about how he would. It's not really that he wants to get out of NATO. It's that he wants to refocus NATO on terrorism and its current mission, whatever that means. And so he's done a lot of walking things back and forth. And because, once again, he doesn't have a core, well-thought-out position on any of these. He's just bullshitting.
Correct.
And he doesn't know what's going on, and I don't think he actually cares.
Right.
You know, there's some very high-level things, you know, build the damn wall and, you know, whatever. But, you know, beyond that, there's not a lot to say there.
So, you know, after all of this stuff, you know, and accusations,
his balls are going to go up more.
Cruz got accused of having affairs.
We didn't mention the Cruz affairs part yet.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a National Enquirer story that said apparently Cruz had like five women on the side or something like that.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, but, you know, I guess, you know.
Although, if you read the Inquirer story,
they're saying
story,
that apparently the Rubio campaign was a source of this.
Well, and one of the sources was this Stone guy, who's a Trump advisor as well. The only named source was associated with the Trump campaign. And not a current. He left the Trump campaign very early on, but has been doing stuff that very clearly still supports Trump ever since.
Okay.
What I was going to say is the National Enquirer, before you completely dismiss it as, oh, my God, it's the National Enquirer, who cares? They're also the ones who broke John Edwards' affair.
I have no idea whether this is true or not.
I want to get to that, because the John Edwards story actually won the National Enquirer a Pulitzer. There was actually like a real reporter doing real research, going out there, and they broke this story, whatever. On the other hand, this thing about Cruz, apparently, if you read the article carefully, and I have not, I've only read reports about the article. But it very carefully never actually alleges that Cruz had an affair. It's basically one of the articles that says that what they're reporting is that people are talking about the fact that Cruz may have had an affair.
Okay. All right. So that's a big and very important distinction.
Yes.
Yes.
Because people talk about lots of things.
Correct.
And people may not have any idea, or people may be talking about it specifically for the purpose of putting out a rumor that would hurt somebody.
Right.
Of course, I also heard that there were apparently some Trump people saying that this story about Cruz was actually put out in order to hurt Trump by making it look like Trump was putting out this story.
That sounds interesting. I like that. I like that angle. It was very sneaky.
Anyway.
Okay, so and then, all right.
Yes, we got more.
Yeah, this
we
is
got more.
1 week of stuff in the Republican campaign. This is insane. Okay, all right. And then, by the way, all the candidates backed off the pledges to support the Republican nominee.
Did all of them at this point?
As far as I can tell, yes.
I know Trump did. So.
Yeah, so did Kasich and so did Cruz.
Okay. And I've heard some renewed talking about third parties this week, but the thing is, and I'm going to repeat this, I've said it before, if there's going to be a splinter group running for, if the Republican Party is going to split in two, basically, then the rump Republican Party can't wait till the convention to do it.
Correct.
Because it's too late at that point to get on the ballot on enough states to make a serious difference.
So you think, like, Trump breaks before we get to the convention?
No, I don't think that. He's the front runner. But I don't think it's going to happen at all.
But he keeps saying how he's getting screwed.
No, I think he's in it till the convention, and he makes a big deal then. I'm just saying that if it gets to the convention and he gets screwed there, and he says, okay, I'm going to run it as a third party, by that time he's already too late to get on the ballot on, like, a third of the states. You know, so okay. it's just like, now you could still do that. You could still go get on the ballot on the remaining states you could get on the ballot on. Or again, we talked about, you could try to hijack one of the existing third
parties. That's what I was going to say, hijack the Reform Party or
something that's on the, and there are also other ways you can do it. It might be easier to get on as an independent rather than a third party. There are distinctions there, and you might do it different ways in different states. But if you wait until the end of July to do this stuff, which is when the conventions are all over, then you're really way too late to make an attempt. Well, let's put it this way. You're not too late to be a disruption. You're too late to put it together a serious attempt at winning.
Right.
But if all you're intending is to be disruptive, you could still be disruptive.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you could be disruptive.
It doesn't matter when the hell he does it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, hell, you don't even have to be on the damn ballot. You
right.
Go tell people to write in your name, and that's legal in some states and not in others, but what the fuck? You do it anyway. You could see Trump making a ruckus from July to November, even if he wasn't a candidate, if he felt
hell
like
yeah.
it.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, so there's a lot of there's so much going on, but like, yeah, no, if like the Cruises or whatever felt that they were definitely going to lose, and they wanted to run an independent conservative, like most of the time, recent talk about a third party has not been Trump running as a third party because he's the front runner right now, but rather whether certain conservative groups could put up a quote unquote true conservative to run as an independent. And apparently there were a number of conversations about that in the last couple weeks. But they would have to start now. They would have to start getting on the ballot. I believe I've read a number of times that the earliest state deadlines are in Texas, which obviously is pretty important in the Electoral College. They're coming up very soon, like next, like in June or something. I think you have to submit like many thousands of petitions. If somebody's going to do that, they need to get moving. And I just haven't seen a serious movement in that direction yet. And it's just by the time we get to the convention and we know what has or has not happened at the convention, it's kind of too late. And some states actually have sore loser laws that specifically say if you ran in the primaries, you can't run as a third party. So anyway, So, any other specific hijinks from the last week?
I think that's about all I took record of.
So the one other thing that I wanted to highlight, we talked in previous weeks a lot about all of the potential delegate hijinks if we get into a contested convention, or even if we don't get into a contested conventions with the rules and the fact that there are a lot of delegates who may not really support the person that they're pledged to support, and so what would happen with their blah blah blah, and there's lots of craziness there. But the other place that I was reminded of very recently in the last week that I kind of knew in the back of my head from last time around, but didn't remember, is that all of this binding and all of this stuff we're talking about is, of course, for the vote for the presidential candidate. There is no binding whatsoever on the VP choice.
That was my understanding, yeah.
So what this could mean is that, for instance, even if Trump does manage to ride this knife's edge and come into the convention with a majority of delegates on the first ballot and win outright, he may not be able to pick his own vice president.
Ooh.
Because the convention doesn't have to ratify the whoever the president chooses. They can pick whoever the fuck they want for the vice presidential slot. And if you've got a situation where Trump has a majority of the pledged delegates because they are bound to him, but not a majority of the actual support of the delegates at the convention in terms of their real consciences, not where they're bound to, those delegates could decide, you know, Trump likes such and such a guy. Well, fuck Trump. We didn't really want him anyway. We're going to nominate this other guy that we do like. And Trump can't say no, because the convention nominates the vice president. It's just a matter of history and courtesy and whatever that conventions for many, 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 many decades have simply nominated the guy that the president says, this is the guy I'd like to be my vice president. But right. That has not always been the case, and it doesn't have to be the case.
Or you can get Stockdale.
Isn't he dead?
I think he's dead. So, yeah, that's not going to work.
But you could have, for instance, the convention nominating Cruz to be vice president over Trump's objections.
God, what a shit show that would be.
So you could have a situation where Trump was the nominee, and his vice presidential nominee was...
He's a guy he can't stand.
And who wouldn't campaign for him, necessarily.
Right.
Or he might campaign saying, look, go ahead and vote for Trump, because you know Trump's going to get tired of this job after like 2 weeks and quit. You'll get me anyway.
Get me instead. Right.
which brings up the one other thing is this article that came out by a supposed someone who worked at a Trump super PAC before they shut down because Trump said he didn't want any super PACs. Let's see, what was her name? Anyway, the point is, it was someone who says, you know, basically her article was about how she was a Trump supporter, and then being involved, she found out, like, you know, how much of an egotist he was, who didn't know what he was talking about, and she can't support him anymore, and so she quit, and she's now lobbying against him. But what was interesting in part there is she said that at the very beginning, Trump had absolutely no intention of winning. His intention in this race was to be a protest candidate. He did not want to win. He did not want to actually be president. He wanted to go through the campaign and be a protest and blah, blah, blah. His goal was to maybe come in second. Wow. And everybody, including them themselves. And here, by the way, the article is at xojane.com. It's entitled "An Open Letter to Trump Voters from His Top Strategist Turned Defector."
By the way, she's not a top strategist defector. She worked for a super PAC. I'm not even sure.
There was an article in Vox. I believe it was Vox, right?
Right.
No, it was the Washington Post. That basically saying that It was by Philip Bump in the Washington Post saying that Trump's strategist tell-all isn't really that juicy unless, because as the super PAC, she really shouldn't know what's going on in the inner workings of the campaign because they're not supposed to talk to each other. Unless, of course, they actually were, which is a story because they shouldn't be talking to each other.
Correct.
And of course, she also claimed that those conversations were at the very beginning. Like, so she could have talked to the Trump people before she was actually hired by the super. But anyway, the thing that she said that was interesting besides all that, is that bit about they never really intended to win. And Trump sort of, now that he's in it, you know, his ego won't let him out of it. Now he has to do it. Right. But he never really wanted to be president. You know, and we've said this before. I don't think he really wanted to be president. He wanted to get his name out there.
Wanted the publicity.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he started believing his own bullshit. Yep.
Yep. And so, yeah, now he wants to be president, maybe.
Maybe.
Or at least he wants to win. I don't know.
At least he wants to win. He's gonna quit before the inauguration.
I don't know about before the inauguration, but yeah, can you imagine him actually like doing this job for 4 years? This is a hard job.
Right.
This doesn't look like a man who likes to do hard work.
Not particularly, no.
Now, of course, as many people have pointed out, how hard exactly it is depends on how much you delegate away. Different presidents have had different styles.
I really believe it doesn't matter.
It's still the burden's on you in the end. Matter. But you can imagine a president who just says, here's my chief of staff, talk to him. I'll be on the golf course for 4 years.
I guess you could do that.
Yeah.
I guess.
Anyway. And I guess we're wrapping it up. I have one more really important thing to say. Rubio has sent a letter to the chairman of all of the state parties requesting that, basically saying that his decision to suspend his campaign is not intended to release his delegates and that he wants to keep his delegates bound to him on the first nominating ballot. So he sent this out to all of the states where he competed.
Interesting.
Specifically, Alaska had already reallocated his delegates. But like the picture I'm looking at right now is actually to the chairman of the Alaska Republican Party. So I'm not sure. Maybe they'll give it back to him. I don't know if things aren't finalized yet.
Sam from the future here. And yes, yes, indeed. Alaska did give Rubio his delegates back. Whoopee. Yay. 5 more Rubio delegates.
But one interesting thing is if you look at the exact wording of this letter, I write this letter to inform you that the decision to suspend my campaign for president of the untied states is not intended to release any national convention delegates.
Oh, that's good.
He misspelled United on United States.
Well, they could be untied. Something.
Anyway, yes. Anybody can make a typo, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've done them enough. I'm not gonna say that I'm perfect on that.
Oh no, I make typos all the time, and as I've complained about autocorrect before, especially I was looking just today at like a text I sent related to work, where a word was replaced by both an email and a text today, actually, where a word was replaced by a completely unrelated word that I of course did not find until well after the thing was sent. And it's like, okay, you know, and I know I should probably just turn off autocorrect because frankly I would rather send out
a garble
I would rather send out a word with an obvious misspelling where I made a typo,
transformed it to completely a totally different word.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like I forget what word it was, but it was like it changed the meaning of the sentence, or it made the sentence mean nothing because it's like, blah 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 blah, garbage truck, you know, and nothing to do with anything. Why does it say garbage truck? And, you know, I trust the person at the other end would be like, oh, autocorrect. But, you know, maybe not. Maybe they're like, what the hell does he mean? What's wrong with this guy? Why is he talking about garbage trucks?
That sounds really, you know, I'm trying to find, like, you know, because I mean, I use Siri regularly sometimes to just type out messages, I get like all sorts of crazy stuff, like occasionally happening because of this. I'm trying to see if I can find a choice.
I'll give you another one. There's one of my coworkers' names that gets auto-corrected all the time.
And it gets corrected into what?
Just some word.
Any word?
I forget. It like takes the last couple letters off or something. Because it's like, no, that's wrong. And like sometimes I'll catch it and sometimes I know I won't. And I know there's undoubtedly something I can click or train. And this is on my computer, not my phone. There's something I could do to train it, to know the word and blah, blah, blah. But that's extra steps. I don't know. And blah, blah, blah. And so it just hasn't happened. And I should just turn off autocorrect. I should just turn it off.
Well, anyway. All right. So
anyway, anything else to say about the Republicans or about anything else before we wrap it up?
I think we could wrap this puppy up.
Okay. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in once again to another episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. We always appreciate you. Like us on Facebook if you haven't already. Contribute to the conversation on Facebook or on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. Please also check out my election stuff at electiongraphs.com. Have a great week. And we'll talk to you next time.
By the way,
one
extra thing I got to add.
Yes, I
just saw a crazy story. A pilot was charged with being a pimp. An airline pilot.
Okay.
Is that something extra?
I guess so.
Well, that's for my lightning round.
There you go.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Goodbye. Okay, Alex, say goodbye.
Wait. Cha, cha, cha. Wait.
Go ahead, ring the bell.
Cha, cha, cha. Ring, ring, ring. Goodbye. All right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
When does it stop?